Third Lions rallies are held across the world to mark the 74th anniversary of Nakba, which marks the forced expulsion of Palestinians from their homeland. Lebanon is holding key parliamentary elections with economic challenges, a big issue on voters' minds. And authorities in the U.S. city of Buffalo say a gunman who shot dead 10 people in a black neighborhood was racially motivated. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumish Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Israeli forces have attacked Palestinian protesters in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Bareh. The protesters were out on the streets to mark the anniversary of Nakba, or the Day of Catastrophe. That is when Israel was created 74 years ago. Soldiers used tear gas and live ammunition to disperse the demonstrators. The protesters waved Palestinian flags and denounced the Israeli crimes. They held placards with signs reiterating their right to return to their ancestral land. The protesters also carried pictures of journalist Shirin Abu Akleh, who was fatally shot by Israeli forces on Wednesday. Similar rallies took place in other West Bank cities, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip.
Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip held a rally to mark the 74th Nakba Day, or Palestinian Catastrophe. Angry protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and slammed the silence of the international community over the plight of Palestinians. Nakba Day marks the disposition and expulsion of Palestinians from their ancestral land prior to the creation of the Israeli regime in 1948. More than 7 decades down the road, Palestinian refugees, who are numbered in the millions, are still scattered in camps in Gaza, the occupied West Bank, and several other countries.
As we mark Nakba Day, we will never forget how Zionist gangs expelled our parents from their original towns and villages. We will never forget how Zionist gangs slaughtered our relatives. One day, our children and our grandchildren will free Palestine, and we are willing to die for our just cause and for our homeland.
In 1948, 85% of the Palestinian people were forcibly displaced from their homeland, and over 500 villages were destroyed in order to establish the Israeli regime. Decades on, Palestinians have been trying to liberate their occupied lands by resisting the Israeli occupation.
On Nakba Day, the Palestinian resistance factions stressed the sanctity of the right of return of all Palestinian refugees to the historic land of Palestine. The right of return is an individual and collective right that cannot be forgotten. We also stress that armed resistance is the only way to free Palestine and secure the right of return.
According to international law, refugees have the right to return to their homes of origin, receive real property restitution, and compensation for losses and damages.
74 years after displacement, Palestinian refugees remain steadfast in their refusal to give up their right of return to their original towns and villages. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
People have filled the streets in countries around the world in solidarity with Palestinians on Nakba Day. Thousands hit the streets of Australia, New Zealand, and the United States carrying Palestinian flags and chanting anti-Israeli slogans. The rallies took place in the cities of Sydney, Melbourne, Auckland, San Francisco, and San Diego. Similar demonstrations were also held in Europe on Saturday. Protesters there denounced Israeli brutalities against Palestinians, but the German capital Berlin banned all public commemoration of Nakba, sparking criticism from pro-Palestinian groups. The rallies in Europe were held in major cities including Vienna, Copenhagen, and London. A Palestinian has succumbed to his wounds, which he sustained in an Israeli gunfire in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Dawood al-Zubaydi was shot by Israeli snipers during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp 2 days ago. He was a former prisoner in Israeli jails. Jenin has recently turned into a flashpoint due to repeated Israeli attacks. Regime forces have been raiding the area in search of suspects of deadly Palestinian operations deep inside Israel, including its capital, Tel Aviv. Several Palestinians have been killed in the Israeli raid so far. Veteran Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh was also fatally shot by Israeli forces while covering one of these raids. Polls close in Lebanon's parliamentary elections, with the people hoping for the revival of the country's battered economy. Nearly 4 million people are eligible to vote across 15 electoral districts. They will be picking from over 700 candidates contesting for 128 seats. The results are expected on Monday. The elections come amid an unprecedented economic crisis that began in 2019, leading to a currency collapse and plunging over 70% of the population into poverty. The last election was held in 2018, with the Hezbollah resistance movement and its allies winning the majority of the seats. The Hezbollah chief blames the crisis on a U.S.-led conspiracy against Lebanon. The next parliament is due to vote on key reforms required by the International Monetary Fund to unlock financial support. It will also elect a new president to replace Michel Aoun, whose term ends at the end of October. Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, authorities in the U.S. city of Buffalo, New York, say the Saturday mass shooting at a supermarket there was a racially motivated hate crime. 10 people died, 3 others were wounded in the shooting. 11 of the victims are black. Buffalo's authorities say the gunman, 18-year-old, traveled hours away to a predominantly black neighborhood to carry out the shooting. He has been identified as Peyton S. Gendron, and he has been taken into police custody. Gendron says that he was live screaming as he carried out the shooting. U.S. media also say that he had written a white supremacist manifesto prior to this incident. He is charged with first-degree murder. The attack was the deadliest mass shooting of the year in the United States. To discuss that further, we're joined by our correspondent Colin Campbell, who's joining us live from Washington, D.C., and also we have Frank Emsbeck, emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin, joining us live from Madison. And let's begin with Colin. They say it's a hate crime, racially motivated. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, they're looking at some of the words that he used in his manifesto and some of the sentiments that he may have uttered when under arrest. And he talked about something called replacement theory, which is an idea that whites will be replaced by minority groups in this country, and that it's being specially engineered, and society is being specially engineered for whites to eventually become the minorities and then be dominated by the minorities. This is an ideology that's usually espoused by one of the commentators on one of the cable program shows here in the United States. And obviously, this is not something that is talked about widely, about what the commentator often says, because many people realize that it's just bloviation, but some people buy into this ideology. At the same time, this is not an ideology that is something that the government says that they are doing. It is statistically showing that white people in this country are having less children. Some people are also talking about how that is motivating abortion policy in the United States. But there is a demographic shift. America is becoming browner just because of a natural trend that's occurring, not some socially engineered type of cultural bias that the government is implementing. However, not everyone believes that, as did this guy who affiliated and empathized with Nazis as well.
Okay, so Professor Frank Emsbeck, can you tell us more about this type of mentality right now in the U.S., and how serious is this?
Well, it's quite serious, and it isn't just the U.S. One of the issues in the French election recently was replacement theory. That was being espoused by, I guess, the person who came in fourth. In any event, here, we should understand that for the first 87 years of the country's existence, that is 4 score and 7 years ago, as Lincoln said, we had slavery, which is white supremacy. Then there was a brief period of time, about 12 years at the most, of what we call Reconstruction, where in the South, legally, blacks and whites were equal. That was then overthrown. And then basically, legally, until basically the 1960s, you had a legal thing that basically said segregation was okay. In other words, white supremacy was in part of really sort of, I guess, included in and sort of baked in to the American psyche. So this is not something that's sort of coming from the outside. Lately, of course, people recognize that there's a shift demographically. And everybody says that, you know, in 10 years or 20 years, white people will be a minority. Well, if for 200 years of the country's existence, more or less, white supremacy was part of the culture, part of the legal business here, it's very, very hard to all of a sudden say, well, that's all gone, in a deep way. Not necessarily people running around saying, well, I'm a white supremacist, but a really sort of core belief in part of the country. And that is what got expression and is expressed by the supremacy theory, by the replacement theory, and hence extraordinarily dangerous in a society like ours, where guns are very, very widely available and people use them.
Okay, before we continue on that note in particular, gun violence, as you just mentioned, let's take a look at some social media reactions to this story. Okay, so Matt Evenden says, to all media covering the Buffalo mass shooting, make sure to call the shooter what he is, a white supremacist and a terrorist. I don't care how old you are. If you go to a grocery store and kill 10 people and stream it on Twitch, you are a terrorist. Tarek Nasheed says, this is confirmed. A white supremacist specifically went to a low-income black neighborhood in Buffalo, New York, to carry out a mass shooting. These types of white supremacists are allowed to sit online and plot these attacks, and nothing is done to thwart this type of anti-black terrorism. Tristan Snell says the Buffalo shooting is a domestic terrorism. This is not a mental health case. This is a terrorist with an agenda and a manifesto. Call evil by its real name. And finally, Robert Griffin says another mass shooting, this time in Buffalo, New York. More innocent lives lost, more prayers going up for the families who lost loved ones. Yet, we sit by and allow politicians to stuff their pockets and make gun control a political issue. Saving lives is more important than guns. Okay, so Colin, let's continue this discussion on that note which Professor Emspach left us on, gun violence in the United States. This is, again, another case, one of the worst, particularly the worst in 2022, I assume.
Yeah, this is one of the biggest mass shootings, if not the biggest mass shooting so far this year. And the man who used the AR-15 is where investigators are looking at how he used this gun in order to take lives rather quickly. And, the video, I've seen part of it, it is rather disturbing, and he opens fire in a parking lot. As he advances into the store, he basically mows people down with his gun. AR-15 is one of those types of weapons that has been at the source of controversy as to how it should be regulated, because it is capable of mass shootings and firing bullets at a relatively fast rate with obvious efficacy. And so I believe that, again, this is going to be a topic of discussion. Now, will anything be done? That is highly unlikely. There are a lot of other issues going on in the U.S. that usually take priority over discussions of gun violence, regardless of how many people are killed. We've seen this happen in Sandy Hook in Connecticut. We've seen it happen in Las Vegas, Nevada, where many people were killed, and it seemed like it was just a hot headline for several days, and then it just disappeared as to other issues. And right now we are facing a deep inflation. A lot of people are worried about the economy, and I suspect that will continue to be at the forefront of conversation, even more so than trying to create measures for gun control.
Oh, exactly. So, Mr. Emspach, what is your opinion? We see, of course, we have talked a lot about constitutional rights for the people living in the United States, but using weaponry that is designed for a war zone in a residential area, even having access to that kind of weaponry, it just doesn't sound right.
Well, it isn't right. I think that you can't talk about the gun control issue anymore as separate from all the other right-wing agendas here. What's going on here? You have a gerrymandered system where, in fact, the democratic will of the population in many, many aspects cannot be consummated. It just can't happen. This is true in Wisconsin, where a majority of people believe one thing, and the state legislature elected by a minority does something else. But I think more fundamentally, what's going on here with Buffalo and the replacement theory and whatnot is also a concerted effort by the Republican Party to eliminate the discussion of race, racism, and all these things from the public school system. In other words, to be able to confront racism and white supremacy and those issues that are deeply part of our past here, you have to talk about it in some kind of context. And that is being attacked. And in that kind of political, you know, background, you have gun control. It's a constitutional right. Nothing can ever be done about that. The pioneers had it, so should we, and so forth. And so it's all part of a political agenda that in fundamentally supports white supremacy and leads people to believe that the only way to actually maintain that supremacy is going to be through armed resistance. And in our history, with the overthrow of the Reconstruction governments in the South in the 19th century, we saw that. And it was successful from the white supremacist point of view. And I think we need to understand that if we're going to move forward.
Thank you very much, Frank Emspach, Emeritus Professor at the University of Wisconsin, joining us live from Madison, and also our very own Colin Campbell, live from Washington, D.C. Thank you very much for both of you for sharing your views with us. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
in the limelight.
Indeed, most Western media outlets draw from a standard playbook, rather than digging deeper to find the truth and to challenge the Israeli regime statements. Reporters instead help the regime to shroud events in ambiguity. This double standard exposes the complicity of Western media in covering up Israeli crimes, says Abir Kopti, blogger and activist, in an article titled "Shirin Abu Aghalé Killing: How Western Media Parrots Israeli Regime Propaganda." Stay tuned for more. All of Palestine has united in shock to mourn the killing of iconic Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Aghalé by the Zionist regime. But amid their grief, they are forced to witness how Western media outlets yet again are failing them. When a Palestinian is killed by the Zionist regime forces, the act is always described in passive terms. Abir Kopti, blogger and activist, says, "We just die on our own. No one kills us. Sometimes we die as collateral damage in clashes, with no context given as to how the altercation broke out or the power imbalance at play. Then comes the automatic adoption of the Israeli regime talking points, which are always manipulative. The Zionist regime's strategy is to immediately deny responsibility, then to cast doubt on Palestinian testimonies, laying the groundwork for the assertion that there are two versions of the story. The media then repeats this uncritically." On the day Abu Aghalé was executed, the reporter of BBC World Service parroted the Zionist regime talking point that she was killed by Palestinian gunfire, then noted that Palestinians had said she was killed by the Zionist regime fire. Most international media adopted the same lines, almost as though they had written their pieces collaboratively on a joint Google Doc, while being sure to air all of the Zionist regime's talking points. However, Western media failed to give the same consideration to the Palestinian side. Palestinians have every reason to distrust the fabricated regime of Israel, which habitually uses such investigations to bury cases. But Western media do not appear to care about this vital context. The skewed coverage continued even during Abu Aghalé's funeral. After the Zionist regime forces attacked Palestinian mourners, with live footage showing a deliberate and unprovoked assault, major news outlets disingenuously wrote about clashes erupting or violence breaking out. Indeed, most Western media outlets draw from a standard playbook. Rather than digging deeper to find the truth and to challenge the Zionist regime statements, reporters instead help the fabricated regime of Israel to shroud events in ambiguity. And no matter what comes next, even if the next story includes a line about the Palestinian response, the first impression has already been set. In Abu Akleh's case, little effort was needed to debunk the Zionist version of events. She was accompanied by several other journalists whose testimony aligned. They all said the same thing. Abu Akleh was targeted by an Israeli sniper. Unfortunately, it would seem that the words of Palestinian journalists are not sufficiently credible for Western media. Testimony from journalists such as Shata Hanaisha, who was next to Abu Akleh when she was killed, Ali Asamudi, who was also shot and wounded in the incident, and Mujahid Asadi, who also witnessed the killing, are not accepted without further validation from Israeli rights groups such as B'Tselem or news sources such as Haaretz. Even then, when the Western media can no longer avoid exposing the Zionist regime's lies, they may add a few lines to their stories here and there. But when the integrity of these stories is truly crucial, in the hours immediately following these types of events, reporters habitually stick to Zionist propaganda. This, in turn, sticks in the minds of the readers and viewers. When journalists are killed in other parts of the world, reports from Western media immediately cite the killing. This double standard exposes the complicity of Western media in covering up the Zionist regime's crimes. Ending this complicity would not require much. Just for international media to treat Palestinians, including journalists, with the respect they have earned.
Welcome back to Aperture. We looked into the life of Muhammad Iqbal from his birthplace in Punjab province of British India, now in Pakistan, to his academic studies in the University of Cambridge. Iqbal was a very learned man who was known for his political ideologies and philosophical theories. He is fondly remembered as a great poet and scholar. The political content of Muhammad Iqbal's poetry is one of the most fascinating aspects of his work. Except for a few poems, his entire poetic endeavor is tinged with the political concerns of his time. Both domestic and international political events shaped his poetry. He not only responded to political events in his verse, but also inspired his fellow Indian Muslims through his poetry to find a way out of the political dilemma in which the British colonial rule had put them. Stay with us as we looked into how Iqbal helped his fellow Indian Muslims aspire to a better future and guided them on the road to freedom.
Iqbal's message is addressed only to the youth. He calls them Royal Falcons. As held by Iqbal, the Royal Falcon has five characteristics. Iqbal wants the youth to catch hold of Falcon's characteristics as much as possible. The five good attributes of the Royal Falcon, as seen by Iqbal, are flying high. So Iqbal wants the youth to fly high for sure. The second attribute is keen eyesight. The youth can fly high only if they have keen eyesight. Its third attribute is that it does not build a nest, nor does it follow richness. The fourth attribute, it loves solitude, as it is a source of creativity. The last attribute, as told by Iqbal of the Royal Falcon, is it does not eat the prey hunted by others. Iqbal wants the youth to show these five attributes.
شاعری کے مختلف ادوار ہیں مثلا ابتدائیہ جو شاعری ہے
علامہ's poetry consists of certain periods
his poetry was at first as the poetry of the day
جو وقت گزرتا گیا اصل میں تو ان کی شاعری
he would say at that time My Urdu poems are like a building made of clay. Little by little, his Persian poems came into existence. Among the first Persian poems were the familiar secrets and the mysteries of rapture. Such poems end with Javed Name, or perhaps with What Can Be Done, O Eastern People.
Gradually, Iqbal changes from a national poet to the poet of the Islamic world. His versified story, The Familiar Secrets and the Mysteries of Rapture, is first translated into English by Reynold Nicholson and published in the region. Years later, his Javedname is translated into German and Turkish in 1957 by those who study Islam, including Anna Marie Schimmel. The book is published in Munich, Hermann Hesse. The German writer and a winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature writes an introduction to Javedname, as requested by the translator. Hesse writes, Sir Muhammad Iqbal belongs to three intellectual domains. His works are the outcome of these three intellectual domains, Indian intellectual domain, spiritual domain, and Western Thoughts Domain.
There are three groups of Persian poets. The first, those who are absolutely meaning-oriented.
Iqbal, as a poet, is highly accomplished. He has bridged the gap between wisdom and heart.
The second, those who are pedantic. Meaning is absent in their poems. They pay attention to words and nothing more.
His poems touch the reader's sensations. Because they are so meaningful and precede even the thoughts forming in their minds.
The third, those whose poems are full of both words and meanings. From among them, we can name Hafez and Saadi.
Such senses calm mind, imagination, and consequently heart. This is a rare attribute seen in such great poets as Hafez and Rumi. The attribute is common in all Iqbal's poems.
Allama Iqbal has mastery not only over words, but also over various meanings, meanings which come out of him and are derived from his thoughts. His meaning-oriented poems outnumber his other types of poems, just as Rumi's. Iqbal says, There is no comparison between the melody and me. Speaking is only a pretext. I am pulling the camel, which has no rein.
Allama Iqbal, with a faith in Islam and a reasonable Gnostic faith indicating his deep certitude in God's sovereignty, moves his mind to search for secrets and mysteries of the creation. In his Islamic Gnostic poems and such verified stories as The Souvenir of Hijaz, The Eastern Message, The Familiar Secrets, and The Mysteries of Rapture, he talks about the principles of internal ontology of things, an idealization of the existential world. While his thoughts are at the height of their powers, he invites Muslims to solidify familiar philosophy exactly in accordance to monotheism, to bring about a new perspective, a new worldview into the Islamic world.
So many memories are related to this house. My father came to live in this house when he was 11. Now, what sort of memory do you want me to tell you? Talking about Iqbal's thoughts reminds us of the familiar thoughts as his central train of thought. We hear Iqbal saying, "To a mullah, a denier of God is an unbeliever. To me, more unbeliever is he who denies his own self."
Just ask, what is Iqbal's philosophy? The answer is, the philosophy of your own. Iqbal's philosophy is in fact the philosophy of one's own, or familiar philosophy. What is familiar philosophy? That you know your origin very well.
Never in my life have I been interested in the world's wealth or posts. I built this very house just to accept my wife's repeated requests. My wife's fate in this house had a different form. Here became a safe place for those in search of their identity. I clearly saw that most Muslims in the motherland had lost their Islamic identity, and to regain it, they need to struggle hard. The house, quiet corner, became a place for those who wish to fly thoughts of self-belief, something much needed by all.
The house originally belonged to my father, Javed Iqbal. The house title deed had already been issued to my grandmother. Upon the death of my grandmother, the deed was transferred to my father. Allama Iqbal would live here as my father's tenant. He paid the rent to my father every month or every 3 months.
Never did I lose my interest in my native land's people. My best time was when I was among people to see them struggle hard to earn their living. I was inspired by their uproar in the Anarkli district. Loftier than the heavens is the station of man, and the beginning of education is respect for man.
Iqbal lays heavy emphasis on the familiar secrets and mysteries of rapture. Familiarity, as seen by Gnostics, means to entertain the self, to fully know the self. It's a famous statement that knowing the self is meant knowing God. Iqbal emphasized, first and foremost, returning to the self. Search within yourself in order to know the self.
Iqbal invites us to know ourselves before doing anything else. Anything else. We shall heighten ourselves to become a human being, par excellence.
From God's own being, the self got a being so. From God's own show, to self he gave a show. About this shining pearl, I know not where. It could be then without a river there.
Iqbal meant to look carefully at human beings on the one hand and to look carefully at Islamic ideology on the other hand. For that very reason, we see Iqbal describing in detail the Eastern society and the essence of Islamic thought.
Who is a selected man? A selected man is the one who is searched for by God. He is in a form desired by God. God wants that kind of human being. This is possible only if man searches for himself, to train himself in a desirable way, to maintain the self, to try hard to fully understand the self. This way finally leads to knowing well the Supreme Being.
The greatest message of Iqbal, as expressed in his poems, is to know yourself, to turn to your own self, to know the East, not the West. Thank you.
signs of going senile can be seen very easily in me. The tick-tock of the clock shows clearly the passage of my life. So quickly pass opportunities. So little time have I to reach the end of the line. Oh, the memory of those days when time's sword was allied with the strength of our hands and unveiled the face of truth. Our nails tore loose the knot of this world. Our bowing in prayer gave blessings to the earth. From the jar of truth we made rosy wine gush forth. We charged against the ancient taverns.
اس گھر کی تعمیر ہماری دادی کی خواہش پہ کی گئی تھی پر وہ اس گھر میں صرف
This house was built under my grandmother's wish.
ان کی یہاں پہ بیمار
But only for two or three days she lived here.
چوتھے دن وفات پا گئی. تو اس کے بعد
She was sick when they carried her in a car. But she survived only for two or three days.
میرے والد تب 11 سال کے تھے جب ان کی والدہ فوت
At the age of 11 my father lost his mother when my aunt was about 6 years old my father and my aunt would come here every day to see Allama who was lying on this bed Allama called them and my aunt would come up to Allama and my father would sit on the other side of the bed this way Allama would feel comfortable
اس طرح والد لیٹ جاتے تھے
میں ان کے چلی جاتی تھی شام کے وقت شام ہونی تو اسکول سے آ کے
I usually went to see them after school
میں نے تو ان کو اسی عادت
Allama was always lying on his bed and resting
میں پاس جا کے لیٹ جاتی تھی تو وہیں پہ سارے مہمان
I was always beside him
ہر وقت لوگوں
other people would also go there
ملنا ملانا مسلسل ہی جاری رہتا تھا
اس گھر میں کئی لوگ علامہ کو ملنے آ چکے ہیں قائد اعظم محمد علی جناح
Many came here to see him among them General Muhammad Ali Jinnah Jawahar Lal Nehru Muhammad Ali Jauhar and many other intimate friends of Allama
علامہ صاحب اپنے بستر پہ بیٹھتے تھے اور
They would come here just before or after midday to have a chat with Allama about topics like poetry philosophy or any other things
تو یہ علامہ کی زندگی
علامہ spent his last days of life here
وہ اس گھر میں گزرا
I was well aware that the main reason why India went under the yoke of British colonization was lack of knowledge of self and reliance on others self-awareness springs out self-dependence and internal richness know yourself Know your hidden parts, nurture your parts, and create a new world, which will compensate for old shortcomings and soul defects, to pave the way for comprehensive development. It is the self which originates existence. It is self-awareness which gives birth to human values. It is the self which affects existence. What human beings see or intuit is a manifestation of the self through mysteries. The form of existence is an effect of the self. Whatsoever thou seest is a secret of the self.
در اقبال آنچه که ما می‌بینیم فلسفه عینی هست. او فلسفه
Iqbal's philosophy is objective and tangible.
بالا یا مابعد طبیعی در واقع
He pulls down philosophy from the metaphysical world to make it tangible and applicable to common people.
استفاده برای حتی مردم
Iqbal's philosophy is therefore a practical philosophy.
Iqbal یک فلسفه عملی
It can be put into practice.
شاید اون رو
O Muslims, you have to preserve your own self. You must follow God and His book, the Holy Quran. When you achieve success in making your own self, you can resist even the whole world. No one can harm you. What is the basis of survival? Survival is based on making your own self. It is the self the nature mentioned by Quran. And this is the essence of Iqbal's thoughts. This is what Iqbal means of the concept of self. For that very reason, every member of the Islamic world should know this way of thinking, personally and socially.
Today we see a group of ignorant people who commit, under the name of Islam, the most heinous acts. Though they are all against Islamic teachings, In fact, they are all Satan's companions and toys in the hands of those who want to mislead them. About these people, Iqbal says, Europe very well knows how to secure interests. While granting to this, takes a loan of that. It gives sustenance to Satan in a way that leaves perplexed even God.
Nowadays, there are calculated plots against Islam. The enemy is very active to destroy the Islamic world from within. I personally think that we need Iqbal's ideas about Islam now more than ever before. You are simultaneously a learned man, a Sayyid, the descendant of the Prophet. But tell me, are you a Muslim too?
A Muslim is called infidel by another Muslim. It is not a non-Muslim who calls him infidel. It is a Muslim. All problems are created and spread here and there by those who are pursuing only their own interests.
The phrase which brings unity to you all is, there is no God but Allah. As Iqbal says, the key to our unity, salvation, and survival, and a sign of familiarity, is in this phrase, there is no God but Allah. Those who follow this phrase never behead Muslims. Iqbal's basic philosophy is that all of us should be unified. All of us should form one single family. Muslims should get unified to guard the sanctuary. I mean Muslims from the Nile shores to the city of Kashgar.
Iqbal tells us to put aside personal interests and to move into a direction leading to social interests. Put aside your personal interests. Let's talk about our religion, our unity. We will end in success. Just because of his thoughts, Iqbal is living on today. I think so.
Just have a look at the tragic events caused by a group of people who are Muslims in name only, as if there has never been a person like Iqbal. His philosophy has sunk into oblivion, as if Iqbal never lived among us. This is a great sorrow, casting a shadow over all Iqbal's philosophy and thoughts. There is no memory of him anymore. The light of all his great books has gone out. The Everlasting Letter, The Familiar Secrets, The Secrets of Rapture, The Persian Psalms, What Can Be Done, O People of the East, The Rout of Philosophy in Iran, The Eastern Message, and Reconstructing Islamic Religious Thoughts. During his last days, Allama says, as Iran, full of unknown meaning, I am unable to endure censurers' sayings. Neither have I any option, nor am I coerced. I am but a living soil, always in revolution.
Then came the last night of Allama's life. His two children came to have their last look at him. Allama was still conscious. Someone from Germany had come to see him, a friend of his or his teacher. The German called the two children and hugged them. My father was leaving the room, but my aunt wasn't. She wanted to stay with him for a while.
At the time, I felt I had to stay with Allama and to sit there motionlessly. Our tutor, Aunt Doris, came there to take me with her. I told her, I will stay here at least for a while.
Allama told the tutor,
she knows that this is the last meeting between the father and the daughter. That is why she doesn't want to leave. Let her stay.
She knows this is the last time she sees her father.
And finally, I felt something was going to happen. For that very reason, I didn't want to leave the place.
Early in the morning, Allama passed away. The muezzin was calling out the morning adhan. Here, beside this bed, was standing his close friend, Ali Bakhsh. There were some other friends too, although most of them were saying their morning prayers at the mosque at that time. Back then, the mosque was more like a house than anything else. Friends were there to say their prayers in congregation. After their prayers, Allama passed away. His last words were the two testimonies. Then his soul flew to the sky. I personally suppose people like Allama will come to this world several centuries later.
Allama Iqbal Lahori died at the age of 61 on April 21, 1938, after a life of diligence and hard work. In the last moments of his life, he put his hand on his chest, telling Ali Bakhsh, his man, "I have a pain here." And upon uttering this ambiguous, meaningful remark, he bade farewell to the world. Many attended his funeral and accompanied him to his final resting place next to Masjid-e-Shah in Lahore. On his deathbed, Allama composed this song. Does a song gone come back again? No, no, no. Does a breeze come from Hijaz? No, no, no. There finally came to an end all those days of poverty. Does a Gnostic come back a second time? No, no, no. Allama's thoughts and philosophy will remain with us forever, only if we follow him.
Iqbal was a significant voice in the traumatic history of colonized India. His sensitivity to the plight of his people was sharpened both by his understanding of his roots and his adaptability to the demands of the new colonized world. Politics and philosophy were combined in Iqbal's poetry. Perhaps today, Iqbal's anti-colonial stance can be referred to as neo-colonialism is still plaguing the world. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.